right, what I'm saying is that you don't need the commission. Have the whistleblower legislation, and therefore anyone that knows about it, come and get your reward. Your reward being what? The full value of the bribe. If someone got a bribe of $1 million, that's what they get.
That could be seen as a difference in opinion. I wanted to see more of what you're talking about in terms of an example of a loophole.
Oh, well, that's
just
it.
There's just difference in methodology.
Yes. Well, we also have the inspector, the one that's going to go and investigate these matters. Mm-hmm. This fellow is also politically appointed. So what he will do then is there's an allegation of corruption. So this must not go to the police. So none of this, according to their system, goes to the police. The police don't get involved at all. This person must not be a policeman. So you have this person that simply goes and investigates, twiddles thumbs for maybe a couple of months, and then comes back and despite the evidence,
Put short, is a political appointee looking into this thing. That's all you need to say.
Yeah, but what he will come back and say, there is not. Yeah, but what he will say is there is not enough evidence to support a charge, even though the evidence may be incontrovertible. Got his hand in the cookie jar, crumbs wrung his mouth, and yet he's okay.
All on the breath.
Yes.
Mr. Lashley, I cut you off earlier. I wanted to get you back in here before we go back to the people.
I just wanted to... The pastor would have made some comments that I really wanted to respond to, because I think we have to be very careful, how we judge ourselves and the kind of generalizations we are putting out there. Now, the law, as I said, there is, of course, the common prevention of corruption Act, which of course went through a lot of discussion. There is currently prevention of corruption legislation in Barbados now. And we talk a lot about corruption and who. I don't know if any member of this panel could even identify any act of corruption by anybody. But the fact is that this continues. I mean, I don't know if you allow it to go on the air anyhow. But what I'm saying is that we get caught up in this thing about corruption and so on.
But are you saying that there's no corruption in Barbados?
I'm not saying that. I'm just simply saying, one, that if there is corruption, the persons who are alleging that there is corruption have the right to come forward and make a complaint about the corruption. There's nothing preventing anybody from doing that.
Fair.
Including if politicians believe that there are other people corrupting. I'm yet to see a politician come in and going to the police or to the director of public prosecutors and saying, look, I have evidence that X person is guilty of corruption.
I have said on Sunday, right? And I will repeat here now, is that the greatest the level or volume of corruption actually comes from other politicians about other politicians.
Fine.
So it's politicians that perpetuate this whole idea of corruption.
Barbados continues to be internationally judged to be one of the least corrupt countries in the world, in the world. And we still can't seem to believe that. Some people don't even believe that that is a major stake. And this is what I'm saying. While I'm not saying there's no corruption in Barbados, I'm just saying that where are the elements of corruption? Who has come forward and identified a corruption in Barbados? And to the extent that you have evidence to prove corruption, then let us start by putting it on the table. Mm-hmm. Let us start by going to the police or to the Director of Public Prosecutions tomorrow. And if you're credible in relation to your role, whether leading a political party or whatever, put it on the table. Stop this kind of innuendo and allegation.
I think that I want to be honest with you. I get where you're coming from. Yes. I think that that's an unfair strategy to employ. I'll tell you why, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people that actually would have even information about corruption, I think that they are going to be so fearful. There's not the incentive of the whistleblower legislation.
Including politicians?
Let me tell you this. I know of a friend who used to, and this is years ago, so I feel a little less fearful of saying so.
Right.
He used to hold fets and so on and so forth. And they had persons in position of authority who would say to him at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you do not want your fet denied 2 weeks down the road, you need to bring $300 for me right now. Mm-hmm. He could provide evidence of that. Will he dare come forward and provide evidence of that?
But
that is just a simple example.
I know that, but the thing is...
So to say that if you have evidence of corruption to come forward, it's not enough.
No,
I tell you, I believe there's corruption in Barbados.
That may not be enough, but I'm saying if that is not enough, then what is? If people have evidence of corruption, just like how you have evidence of body breaking into body house, and you're not willing to come forward. That is why the bill which we are going to proclaim speak to the protection of witnesses, witness protection. Now, witness protection is not currently a part of our law. But anytime you're going to go to the pathway of having anti-corruption legislation, the same issue you're raising. Mm-hmm. You have to protect the witnesses. Mm-hmm. The witnesses have to
be protected. I would move that beyond white collar crime to crime in general, because everything. People don't want to snitch in the fear, not only victimization on the high level.
Corruption is not only related to white collar crime.
That's why we went to
corruption
the $300.
To any particular area of activity where you're using undue influence to get a result. And right. that is why it is going to permeate every mm-hmm. inch of our community. I just want to say one last thing in relation to what the pastor said, because the pastor made the point that mm-hmm. people in Barbados don't know where they're going mm-hmm. and nobody tell them what to do, and I beg to differ from that. Totally differ. I can give one example, and I focus a lot on young people in Barbados. Huh? Mm-hmm. We have a lot of young people who are focused on what they want to do. They are successful entrepreneurs. In fact, the National Youth Policy of Barbados, which was drafted and approved 6 years ago, was written by young people across all spectra in Barbados, whether they're from, you know, whatever class. So don't go about casting a general net saying that people of Barbados don't know where they're going. That may be politically expedient, but it is not correct based on what the evidence is in relation to young people out there in particular who are doing phenomenal things. There are leaders out there who are asserting themselves. The system can always be improved. But we have to be careful that we don't cast a general net about people don't know where they're going. That is totally erroneous.
Don't move your dial. Apostle Scanterbury is chomping at the bit to respond after this. This is Brass Tacks, the People's Parliament. The People's Parliament, 10 minutes after 11 o'clock. We've got the parties in the House. We've got Everton Holligan from the United Progressive Party. From the Barbados Integrity Movement, we've got Apostle Scanterbury, Grenville Phillips from Solution Barbados. The Barbados Labour Party has John King and Stephen Lashley representing the Democratic Labour Party. Now, just a reminder, we are not talking about white collar crime or corruption exclusively. We are talking about crime and deviance. But before we went to the break, Apostle Scanterbury wanted to make a reply. I want you to go ahead at this time.
Well, I want to reply to what Minister was saying earlier. We look at our country on a whole, and we're happy for the minute amounts of individuals who are so, quote unquote, achieving success to the system. But we're looking at the nation. When we look at the principle of Barbados from St. Lucie to Christchurch, when we look at this principle, we are not seeing this level actually being played outright across the nation. So we're not looking at a few people who are doing well. We're looking at what are the things that have been set in place to give every individual an opportunity. And we're not just looking at our youth. We're also looking at our middle-aged individuals. We're looking at the elderly. What's happening with them? What systems are in place to help them live a better life? And we're looking at, you know, this point where Barbados is now at $13, $14 billion debt. It's going to be harder for individuals. Now, some individuals that will receive assistance already have assistance. They're already from a different level to the average individual in Barbados. But what I'm saying is that when a government is in place, when people elect a government, you are set there by the people to literally open that door for individuals to get things better in their lives. You're not just there to sit there and just have a good time. So we're talking about all of the bigger legislation and all these things that are happening. But what is being set in place that the average Barbadian can have an opportunity? And I can tell you for a fact, you know, we're not, as you said, we're not talking about the corruption part of it. We're looking at the crime and the deviance. But as I said in the very beginning, you have to give people a mental picture. You have to give them something that they can look at, whether it's visible or whether it's psychological.
Right. We take that point. Everton, you know, I want to bring Everton.
I just wanted to strengthen what Apostle was saying, but also say that the membership of the UPP, the whole idea of looking at nation building and proper leadership is important, because through that, you get to bring your entire population along with you so they become more civic minded and they can be participatory in the development of the nation, getting involved in the democracy. Right now, what we've seen over the past few administrations over the last, 20 years or so, is people are removing themselves from this process. Right now, most people out there are not too really interested in the corruption component, any white collar crime on the level, because they feel as though this ain't going to change anyway. And listening to this People's Parliament over the last couple of weeks, many callers called and say, oh, this intellectualizing, we need to get down to the nitty-gritty. So you have people within our society who are afraid to walk in certain places because of some of the crime. But we need to, in our manifestos and our policies, we are talking about strengthening communities, making sure that people in communities have access to the resources of government, making sure that we can continuously engage life skills with people within our communities, fund the NGO organizations so that they can do their work more effectively within communities, but also help to carve out that idea of a nation and the idea of who we are, as my brother John King was saying earlier, who we are, what we are, and what we're here about. So looking at it, every single member of our society has to be involved in this movement. Yeah. Every single one is complicit in the elevation of crime. We have to see the young people out there on the streets, and we need to tell them, you're beautiful. We have good things in store for you. We are working towards, you know what? Just the other day, down my street, a young man, 12, 13 years old, I saw him at home in school time, and I was like, why are you not at school? He said to me, because I have a part in my hair. This is still going on within our country, where you have a secondary institution is going to send a little boy home because he has a part in this year. How are these laws being crafted and developed? Are they still being nurtured from a pre-colonial type of mindset? Do we have free people and progressive people in institutions and social services that are going to make sure now that every time these services are delivered to every single member of our population is delivered with a level of love, care, respect, and appreciation for them? Because we need every single member to bring along this movement so that we can have a nationhood being carved out. So I think that's kind of what I would like to say. I'll let other people have something to say.
Right, we hear from Mr. Lashley, and then we go back to the lines, and then you get your... I see your hand, Greenville.
Yeah, thanks. And I want to also emphasize, certainly from the perspective of the Democrat Labour Party in office, we have always zoomed in on this issue of crime and violence. In fact, I recall the late David Thompson, when he brought it years ago, was ridiculed. In fact, he said that it was not relevant to Barbados. And we have always said, unashamedly, that Barbados is more than an economy. And even that phrase has been ridiculed, because we have said that Barbados is first and foremost a society. And what that meant is that we have to underpin our developmental model with structures that strengthen community linkages, that strengthen the family, that create in individuals the ability and the kind of self-confidence to be able to weather any storm and to assist the process in terms of their own development. Now, when we do that, though, and we talk about the fiscal deficit and so on, and oftentimes we make some very elaborate statements about this, we have determined as a government by policy, even in the face of some very dire economic situations facing us, that we will create and ring fence a social safety net. Now, there's the welfare department, the National Assistance Board, and all of the elements within my ministry, for example, the Barbados Youth Service, the National Sports Council. All these agencies have their linkages in communities. The youth division, for example, in my ministry is very focused, and we did it a lot of the crime prevention approaches. We did the program called Sit Unity. We went into several of the areas within the St. Michael area, and we built leadership techniques using sports and other strategies, using taxpayers' monies. And we also had, for example, a number of interventions where we had Ronald Suki King. We used his model in terms of the block drafts program, and we've been able to get block youth to be symbols of progress in communities and to assume leadership. In fact, we did a partnership with the Royal Barbados Police Force and enforced the emergency, the disaster department, in which we create in the youth, we train them as first responders. So, and that's just only a very small portion of the programs which we felt should be critical at the community level. The youth commissioners, they're all over Barbados. What part of their key role is to build out along with youth in a participatory manner, and also adults. It includes churches, any organization. The dynamics of creating community empowered activity has to do with engagement, and they have actually been doing community projects. I believe in the last 10 years we've had in excess of 300-400 community projects that have been used and actually have helped to make a difference at the community level. What that translates to is making a choice between, for example, trying to be clinical in relation to fixing, you know, having nice numbers, avoiding downgrades, but providing the kind of safety net that safeguards these things that are happening in the community. And I think we've done, we've been able to do a phenomenal job in that respect. And I said that because it's not only talking about it. These things are costly. They require linkages with NGOs and funding NGOs. Part of what we do is to provide
Minister Lashley, a number of
NGOs.
Remember, members of the panel, they want to respond to you.
Okay. I'll come off it.
And I want to respond to.
Okay, no problem.
But we actually can go to the lines and say good morning and welcome to the next caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. Is this Mr. Corey?
Yes, it is.
I'm glad to hear you. The thing is, last week we had a very good program. I really enjoyed that program. This week, I'm hearing things there, and nobody has challenged them at all. For instance, I heard one of your speakers say that we have the least corrupt society in effect. That's not what I've been hearing. I understand we're now to 25. The higher you go, mm-hmm. means the higher the level of corruption. So we move from further down and higher up. So I like to hear these things.
No. We are ranked number 25 out of 175 countries. We've moved up. We're the highest in the Caribbean, and that's what the speaker spoke about. I saw the statistics.
Yeah,
and then that's about perceived corruption, okay? Perceived.
What I heard, thanks for the information.
Mm-hmm. So it's hard to challenge somebody that is speaking correctly.
We are the least corrupt. Well, maybe you can go back to what was said. I don't know. But that's what I heard. That we're the least corrupt. However, the point is this, though. You know, when we have these programs, especially when dealing with the subject of crime, you are primarily speaking to the Barbadian community because you want to prevent it. Of course, you have a wide, very large audience abroad. That I can tell you. Because I've been abroad, I've heard people who listen to this program every day. However, what I am saying that we were told that there is some anti-corruption legislation that is going to be proclaimed. Mm-hmm. And that is a kind of a crime prevention measure. But I've heard Sir David Simmons, who is an disputed authority on anti-corruption legislation, said that legislation that we have is like a sieve. But yet it's going to be proclaimed. And nobody paid any attention to that at all. We've had a rush of pieces of legislation here that the public was really amazed at. And I'm hearing that there was wide consultation and things of that nature. All I'm asking is that when these statements are being made, that somebody challenges these statements. Because if you had wide consultation about the Road Traffic Act, and then after that, you had so much condemnation, there must be something wrong with the width of that consultation.
But sir, I made that point, you know. I made the point that why is there's this, the laws against the people are passed through quickly, and because there was objection to laws against what people can perceive to be the big wigs, it was stalled, and stalled for some 5-6 years. And I did make that point. So
yes, then the thing is about that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that any of the political parties, at least not the one who is in power, will ever admit to the fact that crime has a direct correlation to the economic situations in this country. If people are suffering, they'll find somewhere. Now, take, for example, there is someone I understand who is running for parliament. And this one admitted to having broken the law because it was the only way out for them. But they are now trying to get to parliament because they do not want to see other people having to resort to that particular type of crime. So I hope that we should be honest with ourselves and admit that until we can get a more equitable distribution of our goods, the economy, that we will always have crime. But of course, there'll be those who will find through greed to engage in other types of crimes and to bribe politicians. Because, you know, we talk that politicians can't be bribed and so on. But when I hear that you're going to effect a sale, and then after you've sold off something that everybody's objecting to, then you will tell the people what the sale was about. Probably you only tell them half, though. You don't tell them the whole thing.
I want to pick up on two points that you're making. One is that you said that none of the political parties would admit the correlation between crime and the economy. I don't know. Anybody want to say that if you object or agree? Do y'all admit the correlation between the economy and crime?
Of course,
yeah. I think so, sir. That, no, y'all don't have to jump in. That one is known and established. So we put that one aside. Sir, any other pertinent points? Let's go on to another caller. Brad Stats, the People's Parliament. Good morning and welcome.
Good, Mr. Lane. How are you this morning?
Fine, thanks. And you?
Good. Yes, I just fine for the time being. I just would like to make a gloss over the crime, and I want to ask two questions. I will hang up and wait for the answers if that be
appreciate right. It. Go ahead.
No, I am saying that when I listen to the issue with crime, and when you look at the word white collar crime, and you look at the other crimes and you look at them, you will see that the notion that is made sometimes in Barbados about two Barbadoses has its relevance. I will say this from this standpoint. We have a number of people in Barbados today, and you will call them like associations and so, who hold licenses and things for certain things, whereby the average person...
Ma, you tricked me, you know. You still get asked two questions and hang up.
I said they will comment on the crime, and then they'll ask two questions. I'm saying that you have some people who have license and so that you will say they are legal. But at the same time, within those that framework, you will have people exploiting the poorer classes of this country, where you will see them falling victims to a number of things where you will call and you never know where the problems come from. I am saying that their laws and needs and our constitution needs to be reviewed so that you can put these things in perspective, where things like this cannot happen continuously and having the top protected and the bottom exploited.
Agree.
No. I am saying this. I am going to ask the panel this general question. I would like to know from them, because I'm dealing now with the young people, what they have in mind and plans they have for the development of the young people in this country, especially where the youth is concerned today, and you look at its deviances and so. Now, I'd like to direct this question to the representative of the Democratic Labour Party. If I can recall, in the last election, the Democratic Labour Party would have brought a manifesto called the Youth Manifesto to the young people of this country. I would like to know how many things in that manifesto was achieved or were done, because for me, the young people haven't developed anything from it, from that. What would have happened is that now we have the young people who were protected by the way of education. And I don't care what nobody say and how it can't continue. Everybody in Parliament and your party in particular and others would have benefited from that aspect of education. And now today we have young people, you meet them daily, who are out there and have minds, and they have a mind of progress where they can become the real youth and leaders in tomorrow's world in Barbados. They are now restricted because they are mostly at the poor ethanol, because they have now to pay this tuition fees and so at the level at the university. At the same time, under the former Barbados Labour Party government, the university was never owed any money at any time that I could recall or know about. I would like to know if, based on the failures of your youth manifesto, what has the roadblock that were put in the youth road today for their development?
Okay. If I may respond to the caller, I want to say, first of all, though, yes, we did have a youth manifesto, and in fact, quite a number of the recommendations and the projections in there were put in place. The whole focus of youth development is really a continuity, and I have to be fair to say that youth development initiative has been at the center of the policy direction of respective governments, not only this government. The youth department, which is within the Ministry of Culture, Sports and Youth, is a department that has been trained at the level of Commonwealth youth development our standards, and that has been so even under the former administration. What we did in the national, in the youth manifesto, was to project a pathway forward in which we could help to move young people along a developmental path. And a key part of that was youth empowerment, and of course to empower young people in terms of political awareness. One of the key initiatives we put in place was the National Youth Parliament, which is currently in place. It has been in place for over the past 4 years. It is meant to answer the call by young people for leadership training and to expose young people to political systems. And that Youth Parliament sits in the Senate of Barbados. And the persons have actually been exposed to a number of debates across the Caribbean. In fact, very shortly, a number of young people within the youth fraternity will be going to participate in the margins of the Commonwealth Heads of Government's meeting in London. We've also put in place a number of key programs. One of them is Endless Possibilities, which is a youth job mentorship and placement program. It has been successful over the past 4 years of its implementation in terms of positioning young people for employment. In fact, it has partnered with a number of key businesses in Barbados. I believe we have about 35 business partners, and I wouldn't call the names, but the importance of that program is it has been able to prepare young people who would not have ordinarily been able to get through the door in terms of how to prepare for work, and we've used our leverage to translate job placement into permanent employment.
Before you go on to the programs, because mm-hmm. you have the programs listed here, you could yes. probably send people to the website or so on, so they could read it. You sung really well. You're doing what you're supposed to do. Now I'm going to do what I am supposed to do, and I'm going to ask about some tangible, quantitative, qualitative success. Because my issue with a lot of this talk about youth programs, when you're talking about prevention of crime, is that I have believed for a very long time that a lot of them have been a lot of failures. Because you have a program that's supposed to be national, and you have 30 people in a corner here and 10 people in a corner there. You have a lot of community organizations, like the one I ran and many others that I've been involved with over the years, with no resources and doing a lot more. And I can bring the resistance.
I don't agree with you, Corey.
Because that's a, let me. No,
if really you allow me to engage with you, you said you believe it's failures, but you really have an advance of what you think is failures. I disagree because we have empirical evidence of the success of the programs. And if I had more,
and I have empirical evidence of the failure of the programs.
No, but you don't. I would challenge you about that.
But you started your contribution on the fact that there's been this increase in crime and all these different things. And I want to make the linkage there.
I'm saying to you, yes, there has been an issue of crime, but the programs that we have used, for example, let's look at Sit Unity, for example, which was meant to deal with crime in some of the St. Michael areas. You can't say that was a failure because the program has been able to develop youth leaders and has been able to create the kind of focus for those persons involved.
Are you satisfied with the level that it has done that? Are you satisfied?
No, but hold on.
Satisfied?
We're not dealing with the level because you said it's a total failure. I'm saying that
I didn't say a total failure. We never say play about the tape. Rewind and come again. I say a lot of them have been failures.
Failures. I challenge that because even if we are able to dent 10, 15, 20%, of the propensity towards crime, you can't say that that's a failure.
No, that is engaging in mediocrity. You can't get perfection, but you should set a certain standard for yourself. Are you satisfied? But I want you to answer the question. Are you satisfied with the level?
But no.
You're not satisfied. Neither am I. We're saying the same thing.
But that's different.
We're saying the same thing. It's not different.
Hold on. To saying that we can do more is different to saying that it's a failure. I pointed to that one example because I found that both those two programs, the Sit Unity program, what we did is we went into a number of St. Michael districts and we actually tackled the community leaders, the young men on the block who were offending, some of them who were who had actually returned from prison, and we offered them an opportunity.
We need some help in St. George, Mr. Lashley.
No problem. To lead their communities. And what they did, Corey, was that we used, for example, the same models in the youth department, and we trained them to be able to take charge. We didn't take over that what they were doing.
But Stephen, let me admit with you that y'all have been trying things.
But let me
I've
say
seen
one
it.
More thing.
But I'm saying I'm not satisfied.
Fine, but
and you're not satisfied either.
As a minister of the Crown, I would never be fully satisfied. One last point. The other program which we did, and I want to credit Suki King for this, because Suki King came to us, which is the world most accomplished, in my view, Joss Blair, came to us within the youth division and said, but look, how can we do something to reach out to our young people? And then we came up with the concept, but let's try to tackle Block Youth. And in a way, what Suki King, along with the other persons in the department, have been able to do is to reach out to Block Youth, get them interested in drafts, which is a highly mental game, and we were able then to move them to a different plane. Now, we started out in that program 5 years ago with at least about five or six communities, Block people who were warring, who were engaging in crime, and we expanded it. It's now an island-wide program. And the Block Youth will tell you that they are now understanding why, for example, they were having problems with the blocks in different communities. And in fact, we have been able to take the conversation further. And I think it's these programs that we have to talk about, because I don't think there have been failures. We can do more, because to tell the truth, one of the things we have to do now, particularly with the Barbados Youth Service Program, we are not touching the full extent of the young people who need to be touched. No. But that doesn't mean
that's the same point it was making. Okay, when we come back, John King, and the rest, when we come back to this, the People's Parliament on Down to Brass Tacks. The People's Parliament, 22 minutes before noon. Now, before we went on the break, a lot of people wanted to respond. I want to bring in a voice early in the discussion. Someone who walked the walk and also talked the talk. Come to the microphone, sir. You know he's supposed to come in a little later. Introduce yourself and let me hear your perspective on what we are talking about.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Tyler Grizandi from the Barbados Integrity Movement. Mm-hmm. I'm a youth activist. I'm a youth activist who have been and who came from the grounds of the Block mentality that you are now speaking on. And I have evolved and transformed myself into a better person. I'm very successful. I run a business and I continue to contribute to the economy and contribute to the youth. So I've been listening to all the questions that have been asked, and from a Block perspective, from the mentality I was brought to understand and being manipulated into, is that we are not looking for intellectual answers. We are looking for facts. We're looking for things that you said you're going to do, things that you've executed, and the whole concept of this is personally from what I've been listening to, what I've heard from the youths in the Block, because I can tell for a fact, we are only seeing you guys when the time is needed. The intervention and interaction and being communicated with the people has been lacking. So I'm speaking from a day-to-day basis. I grew up in Six Men's in St. Peter. I ran around all over Checker Hall, Jonesy Hill, Crab Hill, Mile and Quarter. These are the places. And then I moved to Eagle Hall, St. Michael. And then I got associated with Chatham Lane and the Orleans where I played football and stuff. So these are places that I spent majority of my life in.
So you work with Blocks and so on. And if people are on radio, you can't see. He's here. He has his tattoos. He has you can see his life behind him, right? Now, help us to understand, what do you believe is needed to tackle people who are nowhere you were before?
First off, it starts with...
Come forward the microphone.
First off, it starts with the mental state of an individual. I'm using this as an example because that is what I had to self-educate. Because when I was in school, the teachers told me that I was mentally retarded. I'm undereducated. So I was always being put down in a stature mentally where my only option was to revolt to anger and ignorance. And I haven't had that potential. I had that potential, but no one have seen it. So I used my ignorance to get and just resent everyone and came out of school. I just walked out of school. I said, you know what? I'm not academically inclined. I'm done with that. You know? And I went into a system where I educate myself into the negative side of life. And I realized at, with divine intervention, because you need to put God first. I put God first. That's why I'm here today.
I was about to ask you what was your turning point, but my
turning point is coming to the realization and the acceptance that there is a God. So on the Roselle Show, we talked about people question about the separation between religion and state. Yeah, okay. We don't need no separation between religion and state. God first. God first, state after. So when I came to that realization and that understanding that this is where I am, this is where I have to be, this is not my destination, this is just my restoration. And I said to Lord, I said, God, take me now. I am in totally and utterly in control of you. And that is was my turning point at that time. So being that I didn't have the resources, I didn't have the individuals to motivate me, you know, my life and my construct was just basically surrounded and constructed by the block. The block is not what you seem it to be, you know. The block is not a bad place. A block is basically anywhere a group of people associate themselves with. That is a block. But then the manipulation of the mind of the youth in getting fast money and getting things that they don't have the importance and the value of tends to be more lenient, because it would be very hard for a youth now to say, look, I'm going to go and get a job, because the lack of the incompetence of the leaders that started this whole spectrum, because the DLP came out of the BLP, so the concept remains the same, and the lack of leadership and mentor, and we as youth on the block as labeled, they label us, the intellectual label us that we are stupid. Barbadians are the most diverse intellectual minds that the world has ever seen, from my perspective.
All right, thank you. John, you wanted to say something too, and I get some reaction from everyone around the table.
Well, the first thing I wanted to say is that it all comes back to what I was explaining to you very early in the program. It starts with the mind. How do you deal with it? How do you nourish it? How do you make people feel about themselves? But I wanted to speak specifically to some of the programs that Mr. Lashie was talking about. Lest we forget that Project Oasis was executed in this country under the Barbados Labour Party, and it had tremendous success in getting young men off the blocks, because I don't think you need to get people off the blocks. What you need to do is to change what is happening on the blocks. So it gave people an opportunity to become entrepreneurs. The Barbados Youth Service was developed under the Barbados Labour Party because I was a member of the board when it first started, right? So programs have been put in place, and more programs are going to be put in place. The problem has been, as I said at the beginning of the program, sustaining the efforts. And you have to be constantly changing, because as time changes, the needs of young people will change with the rest of the world. But I agree with you, Corey, in that we have failed in some areas. But failure is not a bad thing. From failure, you learn.
Correct.
See, so it is only through failure that you learn.
Failure means that you're doing something.
It means that you're doing something. Correct. And you can't have a problem with that.
None.
Right? But the thing is, when we learn from these failures, what next? What do we do after that? And I think this young man has opened, I guess, a number of persons in listening to this program minds as to how people think and feel marginalized on the blocks, and probably feel this sense of hopelessness that the only thing that they can turn to in some cases might be what we call deviant behaviors. The thing is, we have to get in on the blocks with programs that are geared towards self-empowerment of our young people. You don't want to put them in straight jackets, but we have to be as diverse as humanly possible in bringing out the very best in their talents, in their gifts, and pointing them in a direction that is productive not only for themselves, but for the entire country. This is not a simple process. You cannot give a pill to somebody and things change. If you're working on attitudes and minds, it will take time, but it has to be sustainable programs. These programs must be from primary schools. complemented by our churches, complemented by programs that are put in communities, going through such institutions as social care, community development. There are things, and then we keep coming back to this process. Every single person at this table has spoke about money, 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 money. And I've been saying all the time, I think, Heru, you touched on it. You have to make use of NGOs. And there are lots of grants and monies on the open market that we are not tapping into, which will go through NGOs and not through government. And until we reach the stage where we are comfortable engaging these NGOs to do some of the deliverables for us, we are going to be having these conversations and we are going to be beating our heads against a
one unfortunate thing. I want to point out to you, I agree with everything you said before the last point, because I find a lot of the open funding, international funding now asking for the money to go back through government. I see Mr. Lashley agree with me.
I understand.
And they're also giving this money to a lot of umbrella organizations who take a lot of money in administration instead of giving it to the people who doing the work on the ground.
But in what you're saying, Corey, we have no. We have no control over that. But if you take a look at what is happening, let's say on the continent of Africa, because I always check these things, there are always international agencies providing funding going through NGOs where they are getting things done. There has to be something wrong in the communication process that we are not able to do the same.
I just want to say, though, that I agree with some of what has been said. You see, there will always be the need to do more, and systems have got to evolve. What I don't necessarily buy into is not recognizing the systems that currently exist and what they're doing. Now, I understand, and I want to give credit to my friend who has had his experience in terms of the block. I totally agree. The block used to be called, when it was growing up, it used to be called the corner and different names.
Yeah.
And there's nothing inherently wrong with the block. What has happened, though, is the systems of engagement that are used. And I would say this, block people have also a lot of responsibility. It is not a question of a man going on a block and just sitting down and expect that everything will fall from manna. Systems have been designed, outreaches have been done to everybody. In fact, that is why we talk about systems. I like to be very specific. In response to a lot of the issues that we face, okay, we drafted, not we, the young people of Barbados, sat down and created a national youth policy, which spoke in very specific and extensive terms to the key issues and priorities. One, of course, was the block. And coming off of that word, there were a number of initiatives in terms of dealing with what were the issues. But it was not only dealing with block. Essentially, it was mainstream, because you run the risk of, I think you were making this point, Corey, that only some people are deviant in terms of people in society. Deviance does not have any color, class, or creed. And therefore, deviance, we've always been very mainstream in terms of how we deal with it. In fact, some of the development areas, highly developed areas, have young people who actually show that they're in need of some of the same interventions as persons who are not necessarily in some developments. So I think even as we speak, and I will be the first to say, what has actually hamstrung and to some extent prevented the rapid deployment of some programs have always been that big issue of resources. We have, for example, an excellent program. Yes, started this under the previous thing, but continued by us, the Barbados Youth Service, which only recently now we've actually put funds together to do a headquarters for the Barbados Youth Service up at Paragon to ensure they can actually continue their residential phase of the program.
You know, I don't think resources, I say a priority, you know.
Well, priority.
Because I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
The sleeping program for the Barbados Youth Service was hailed as one of the critical areas.
Very successful.
And it was removed partly because of this thing called resources, which I said, removed because of priority.
I agree. But it was removed because we had the issue of the prison. And then the prison was moved to St. Lucie. Then the prison was affected by fire. It was moved to St. Lucie and disrupted the barbecue service and service program.
Again, priority, we could find a place.
The good news about that is that the priority is returning. We are putting some money to get the headquarters done up.
My producer is telling me we have no more time right now. We got to take a break. When we come back, it's the People's Parliament.